And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Great to be with you on this very beautiful, sunny, crisp, clear winter day here in Juno. The forecast for the rest of the day with mostly sunny skies, partly cloudy tonight, patchy fog. Mostly cloudy, though, tomorrow with a chance of snow. Well, that's good. And we'll be talking to folks from Eagle Crest today as part of the show today and talk to them about snow conditions coming up. Also going to be speaking with Alexandra Gutierrez, the new APRN Juno correspondent. Excited to have her on board here. And we'll be talking to her about what she sees as the big assignments ahead. Innovation Summit is happening, and the Juno Economic Development Council is doing that. And Brian Holst from JEDC will be here to talk to us about that. Also, Julie Walker from Aware will speak about Girls on the Run, a new program from Aware, and we'll be talking to her about that. First, here's National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A court ruling in Canada is being hailed as a victory for Métis and non-status Indians across the country. The court ruled that they are indeed Indians, as defined under a section of the Constitution Act, and therefore come under Canadian government jurisdiction. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The court ruling affects about 600,000 Métis and off-reserve or non-status Indians, and it may soon have many of them lining up for membership cards. Some agencies that help Métis applicants dig through old records say they expect to be swamped following the court decision. Still, it could take years before any of it actually translates into benefits for Métis people, the same benefits afforded to status Indians. The court ruling came after a 13-year legal battle. Betty Ann Lavallee is the national chief of the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples. It's one of the groups that went to court over the issue. Lavallee says off-reserve Aboriginal people, the Métis and the non-status Indians, are the most disadvantaged people in Canada.
What we're talking about is fairness, equity, pride, self-worth, dignity. We're giving this back to those people who have been denied.
The ruling also means huge implications for the federal government in Ottawa. The Métis and non-status Indians wanted access to the same health, education, and other benefits the Canadian government gives to status Indians. Policies will now have to be redeveloped. The ruling also comes just days before Prime Minister Stephen Harper is to sit down with First Nations leaders. It's expected his government will appeal the ruling. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Some officials in the Cherokee Nation are questioning the recent purchase of a golf course and acreage by the tribe's business arm. KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports the property is owned by people with close ties to the tribal council.
The family of a board member of Cherokee Nation Businesses recently sold 300 acres of land and a golf course near the headquarters of the tribe for an estimated $8.5 million. The Tulsa World newspaper reports several members of the tribal council have objected to what they called a closed-door deal. The real estate sale includes a non-disclosure agreement between the Cherokee Nation and the Barry family, which sold the property. Bob Barry, who is a member of the Cherokee Nation Business Board, says he had partial ownership of the golf course. He also said the land has been tied up in an estate for his children. Members of the board that oversee tribal economic ventures wouldn't say how the land would be used. In an emergency tribal meeting last month, councillors raised the amount of money Cherokee businesses can spend without council approval from $6 million up to $15 million. The interim CEO for Cherokee Nation Businesses says they'll soon begin the study to determine the best use for the acreage and the golf course. I'm Kurt Courtney.
A Washington tribe purchases a sacred site. According to the Associated Press, the Jamestown Tsklallam tribe on the Olympic Peninsula recently bought a rock and surrounding acres. The egg-shaped rock is known as a spiritual place among Salish people. Plans include banning rock climbing. California lawmaker Roger Hernandez introduces a bill to replace Columbus Day with Native American Day and make it a state holiday. The Los Angeles Times reports the bill has run into opposition from an Italian-American lawmaker who believes Columbus should still be honored. South Dakota is one state which celebrates Native American Day on Columbus Day. During this week in 2012, a public memorial was held in Window Rock, Arizona for Navajo code talker Keith Little. Little joined the Marines at age 17 and served in the Pacific Theater during World War II. He was leader of the Navajo Code Talkers Association and spent much time raising money for a museum project. Little died after battling an illness at the age of 87. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. This is a court-ordered legal notice for Native Americans. The Cobell Indian Trust Settlement is approved. If you believe you might be included in the settlement, you need to file a claim by March 1, 2013 to get a payment. Information is available at the website indiantrust.com or by calling 1-800-961-6109. That's indiantrust.com or 1-800-961-6109. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Road Runners. That's what we'll have with Girls on the Run. And Julie Walker is here from Aware to talk all about that program. Julie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So, Girls on the Run, tell me, first of all, a little bit about the program itself. The idea is that you get get a group of girls. Running is incorporated as a big part of what you're doing with them, but also kind of working with them on other issues.
Yeah, so... Yeah. Girls on the Run is a program of AWARE. It's one of our prevention programs, kind of aimed at stopping the violence before it starts. So Girls on the Run is an empowering after-school program that is for 3rd to 8th grade girls. It's a 12-week program that meets twice a week, and it talks all about how to live a healthy lifestyle. So our goal is to inspire girls to be joyful, healthy, confident, and we use a fun, experience-based curriculum. Which creatively integrates running, like you said.
So is there research on, just in particular, talking about girls this age and then issues of domestic violence? So what's the research about working with kids this age and then what happens later in life and that kind of, what's the correlation there?
Yeah, so some of the risk factors, for any really risky behaviors, I guess, we're addressing self-esteem, we're addressing body image in these young girls, kind of those, pro-social behaviors. So, so it's been really shown to be an effective program.
And running as part of that as a way that kind of bolsters people's confidence and
exactly.
That sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the season, they set a goal to run a 5K, which is 3.1 miles, which is a quite a big accomplishment for a 3rd, 4th, 5th grade girl, even a middle school age girl. So throughout the season, they train with their coaches to be able to accomplish that. And by the end of the season, they complete the 5K, and it's just a very, very empowering experience for them to set that goal, work towards it, and accomplish it.
Now, have you gone through this program? You've kind of conducted this program before?
Yeah, so AWARE has been doing the program since 2007. Mm-hmm. I joined, I became a staff member at AWARE just a few months ago. So I'm still new to the program, but I was able to get out into the schools and help coach last season and get to see the 5K, which was
cool.
Really an inspirational event to see all those girls completing their 5K.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'm sure like that you can just see on their faces, I'm sure, the sense of accomplishment that's happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
To set a goal like that and to maybe even push yourself and think, I don't know if I can even get there, and then to get to it, you can just imagine, oh, yeah, that's going to be a really positive experience. So talk to me a little bit about then, so that's, I understand that, and that's sort of even just the team experience and working through stuff and all that. But then what specifically are you talking to them about, and what sort of specific programs are there that also deal very directly with the ideas of avoiding domestic violence?
Yeah, so we're just looking at a lot of the risk factors, like mm-hmm. the self-confidence, and we talk about, how to interact with other people in a healthy manner, how to be a good friend, how to be a good, teammate. So we talk about body image and the media and how, the media influences young women to you know, think that they need to be skinny. We call it the girl box. So we try to encourage girls to step outside of the girl box. And basically what the girl box is.
Yeah, what is that? Girl box.
It's a place where girls are valued for their outward appearance more than their character inside. So that's kind of an ongoing issue in our society that the media is giving us these images, which is teaching young girls that really they're only valued if they're thin and pretty and they're wearing nice clothes and makeup and such. So we encourage young girls to step out of that girl box and realize that they are perfect the way they are. And that, you know, we can value them for what's inside too.
Yeah. It's a great message. So you're looking for girls to be interested in this, but also you're looking for people to help kind of coach this, right?
Yes. So right now, our spring season is going to start up the first week in February, and we are looking for coaches. And coaches are volunteers who need to commit 1 to 2 days per week to volunteer in the after-school setting in one of the elementary or middle schools that is participating.
And should coaches have a lot of running experience? Should they have been able to coach or teach before? Or what kind of people are you looking for?
Yeah, good question. They don't need to be a runner. They do need to be able to, be physically active with the girls. And we hope that they'll be able to themselves also train for the 5K and run the 5K, but run or walk or even skip a 5K. So if you can complete it, if you feel that you can work towards a 5K and complete it yourself, then you're definitely able to coach. The main thing we really want is girls or women that have the desire to inspire young girls with the messages that we've just talked about.
And you're looking for women specifically to be coaches?
We have had a few male coaches in the past. The program does seem to draw mostly female volunteers, but we would definitely be willing to accept men as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when does the race get run? When does the 5K happen?
The 5K is mid-May. So
okay.
The spring season will be the first week in February through mid-May will be our 5K.
What are some of the training, you know, mileposts that you do throughout that multiple month period?
Well, they do a practice 5K a little bit over halfway through to see, you know, where they're at. And then every day of the program, the distance that they run increases a little bit. So at first they're just running, you know, half a mile or less, and then it's increasing every time. So some of the ways that they incorporate running are very creative, and the girls don't even realize that they're running. So that's pretty neat. They make fun games out of it. So.
And how do the girls themselves find out about the program and find out about signing up for it?
Yeah, so usually it's a school counselor. So we have five elementary schools and both middle schools are wanting to participate this season. And so they'll be getting the word out in their schools. Registration will be opening next week. So they'll get the word out in those schools.
I see. And they're sort of just, is there a kind of target audience that they're looking for there? Is there?
Well, it's a prevention program. So it's really aimed at, you know, any third to fifth grade girl for our elementary, and then our middle school is all sixth and eighth grade girls. So really there's no specific target audience. Would take any girl that could benefit from the program.
Is there a different kind of teaching curriculum for the younger kids versus the older kids?
Yeah, so the curriculum is different for the middle and the elementary age. So it's a little bit more targeted towards what's appropriate for their age.
Yeah, right. And just risk factors at these different ages and stuff like that.
Yeah, so the middle school curriculum goes a little bit more into relationships, healthy relationships. It talks about healthy ways to use the internet and risky behaviors on the internet as well, some of the things that aren't covered in the elementary age.
Right. Well, if people are interested in either coaching or maybe are interested in encouraging a kid that they know to sign up for it, how do they get a hold of you guys and how do they kind of do all that stuff?
So you can contact AWARE. You can contact me at AWARE is the best way. If they're interested in coaching, we do have a coach training coming up. It's an all-day training, and it's mandatory for anyone who's a new coach. So that'll be on January 26th from 8 o'clock to 5:30 at AWARE. And so we do need people to pre-register for that, so contacting AWARE is the best way to let us know that you would like to participate, become a coach. We'll set up a coach interview for you. There is some paperwork that we're required to fill out and do a background check and such.
And you're looking for a total of how many people to help coach?
Right now, we are maybe 10 coaches short.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, short. Okay.
Short. We have some women already lined up. Okay. We have a lot of return coaches that have been doing this for a really long time. And so we are looking for, we're still looking for new coaches.
Very good. Okay. Well, so contact Aware. Ask for Julie Walker, who is the Girls on the Run advocate there at Aware. And if you're interested in coaching or getting involved in the coach training, or if you're interested in a young person that you know being involved in the program, let Julie Walker at Aware know. Julie, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Talking about this today. Ah, Bruce, Born to Run. Yeah, once again, Girls on the Run, contact Aware, Julie Walker to Aware, if you want to get involved in that and you're interested in helping coach. Coming up next, it's Brian Holst from the Juneau Economic Development Council. And Brian, an innovation summit is coming up. Sounds like a pretty interesting thing. What's happening there?
Hey, thanks, Andy. Thanks for having, having me here today. Yes, we're hosting an event here in February. It's called the Innovation Summit. And it's an opportunity to kind of collect our thoughts here in the region about, you know, how do we support economic development in Southeast Alaska? And the reason we're calling it Innovation Summit is because it's a recognition that to grow an economy, especially an advanced economy, the growth really comes from the ability to innovate. It's really not anymore in our world about throwing more resources at an issue,
right,
or throwing cheap labor. That's not an option. It's really about having good products, having good ideas, and then in the world markets, everyone else has good ideas. And so it's constantly renewing yourself and then coming up with that next new good idea that you can bring to market. And so,
yeah, and so what sort of people are you expecting are going to participate in the summit?
Well, we have been working with industry groups the last couple years in a real deliberate way. The JADC has been working with industry groups since it started 25 years ago. But in the last 2 years, we've been specifically working with groups throughout Southeast Alaska that are focused, that operating in certain key industries. And those are key industries because they are, because of their size of the industry and the size relative to our economy. So we're talking about the ocean products industry, mm-hmm. the visitor products industry, mining service and supply industry, the forest products industry. Those are all, and there are other industries, but those are industries that we've been working with deliberately, as well as a renewable energy industry, which is outside of hydro, is not a big industry in Southeast mm-hmm. Alaska, but mm-hmm. we're looking to grow it. So when you ask, you know, who's going to be coming to this event is an opportunity for each of these industry groups that have been working, that have been meeting individually as groups. This event allows each of those groups to meet across various industries. And so in and of itself, that's an opportunity for collaboration and innovation. And it also allows them an opportunity to advance their specific agendas with their colleagues and other stakeholders, but also with federal and state government officials as well. So that's a big part of it. But in addition to that, we have a numerous other stakeholders. You don't have to be from one of these industry groups to find benefit from this event. The University of Alaska is a big supporter of this concept, and their work in research and how they support education, of course, is also critical to driving innovation. And we expect to see a large participation from the university, large participation from state and federal researchers, because they're all there. Much of their work that they do is, you know, allows companies to be more successful.
Yeah, I mean, you have these areas of the country where big innovation happens, Silicon Valley or Research Triangle, and universities and then research centers are always a part of that.
That's right on.
And it makes you excited about what Juno's got here. We've got this really great university facility, UAS. We've got NOAA and all the other great research stuff going on, all the state research that's happening. So there's this really concentrated, especially considering how our population's not that huge, there's a high percentage of people working in innovative ways and working in kind of an innovative industry mm-hmm. Here in Juno. So
right.
It's got fertile soil here.
Absolutely. And what we're adding to the mix is we're creating an opportunity for that collaboration, that interaction to work, because there's all sorts of opportunities for people to collaborate, and it's happening all the time. The role of an event like this is to be a catalyst, is to kind of accelerate some of that innovation by, you know, asking some of the key questions, getting key players together at the same time. And so in addition to them having opportunity to collaborate, we're also going to be introducing what we think are some maybe new ideas or focused attention on some ideas that also will help to spur innovation and creativity and growth in our region.
So what does the event look like? People come to the event, are there panel discussions and lectures? Or tell me about some of the featured things that are happening.
Yeah, there's going to be a mix of activities. So the event is February 11th and 12th. It's going to be a half day, so an afternoon and evening on Monday the 11th of February. And then it's going to be all day on February 12th at Centennial Hall. And so you're going to get a smattering of some presentations. We have some people that are going to we have three speakers that we've lined up that are going to be particularly from outside mm-hmm. our region. We've got some great speakers from within Alaska.
I don't want to
be careful I say that. But we have somebody that's going to come and talk about a concept called shared value, which is a really important concept in economic development and becoming more and more important in our nation. And it's a concept that comes out of the thinking at the Harvard Business School. Michael Porter there, some people may recognize that name. And it's really a recognition that companies are more competitive and make more money when they take into consideration the social impacts that their firms are having, as well as the economic impact. And that seems like a pretty obvious statement, but because many companies take into consideration the social impacts already, mm-hmm. that's not new. There's this whole there's a lot of effort on corporate social responsibility where, you know, companies that are doing well should share and be supportive of the community. But this, the shared value concept is deliberately looking at that, at taking actions that not only that while advancing your business also advance your community. Because when you find that space, your company does better. In the long run, society does better. And then sort of the deeper concept behind that is that as we look at a diminishing role of government in society, just because, you know, we can't pay for it anymore.
Right.
You know, what are sustainable vehicles for positive social change? And wouldn't it be great if we could find a vehicle that has its own set of incentives, like capitalism, that can align well and support social progress as well? So this concept is, it comes out of the business community as a way to strengthen the bottom line, but it has this very interesting possibility of actually helping to address many social issues as well.
Does this speaker come from an academic background or from a business background?
From a business background.
Okay.
It does, yeah. Dane Smith is the person that's coming out to speak. They operate, they work internationally with firms all over the nation, and really we had to really bend them hard to get them to come up here, because you know they're mostly corporate clients that they work for, but we've been able to get them to come to really bring this leading thought here to our community.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the speakers that we'll have. We also have the Portland Development Commission executive director coming up, and I think while this is targeted at all of Southeast Alaska. Portland, we're trying to find a similar scale.
Sure.
And Portland is much bigger still, but it's hard to find scale exactly that fits our region. And Portland has done, there's a lot of people out there that know Portland well, and Portland has really had a renaissance. And the Portland Development Commission has had an important role in that. And a lot of what you're seeing, the good things that happen in Portland and the role of the Development Commission has been in that active collaboration that they've encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that collaboration around renovating sort of just the city of Portland, they've also been very active in supporting industry. And they, similar to the approach that we and our partners have taken of focusing on some industry groups, they've done that as well. And so this is an opportunity for folks in our region to hear from, not only take it from, you know, us at JADC and our partners that this is a great approach, but hear from somebody else that has done this as well about, you know, why this is important and why it's worth sort of actively pursuing this active collaboration year over year, because good things can come.
Yeah, interesting. And so that's two of the featured speakers. And do you have another one too? Or?
Yeah, we have one third. This is Senator Costama from the state of Washington. And he's just retiring. He chose not to run for office again, served in the state of Washington for about 20 years. And he's, we've heard him speak, and he's come highly recommended as an example from outside. We're not trying to be told what we should be doing, but we want to see.
Oh, yeah, new innovative ideas and all that kind of stuff. It's great to hear from people that aren't within our bubble.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And he chairs the, and I guess his terms of office ends these days here, but he chairs the Washington State Economic Development Commission, and they call it the Economic Development Commission. Economic and Innovation Commission. So they actually got the word innovation in there for some time. And they've been very deliberate about creating an ecosystem, they call it, that supports innovation. And so we want to hear what we're inviting him up to help us address something that's really obvious in our context, probably more important than anywhere. You know, we're 95% of the land in Southeast Alaska is owned and managed by the federal government.
Right.
You know, when we come down to what's in private hands, it's just a tiny amount of land. And what that kind of speaks to is that for business to be successful in our region, collaboration with government is necessary. Like whatever your view is on rural government, you got to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he's going to come and talk about is kind of what has been their experience in getting it right or getting it better about, you know, what government can do to positively support economic development and innovation, and where government should really step back and let the let markets.
Yeah, and Washington has had such an amazing run here, both positively and negatively. And traditional industries, Boeing, of course, relocating much of its activity to Chicago, and I mean, you know, the whole that whole realm, but then this massive new industry growing in that area as well. So that'll be fascinating.
Yeah, lots of lessons there.
Right.
And again, you can learn from mistakes. And I was just talking to the senator just in the last couple of days, and we talked about that, is that not everything in Washington is we would want someone to copy.
Sure, yeah.
But learn, you know. Yeah. I would be happy to share.
I mean, that's what happens in economics, you know. They don't always go up. They go up and down, and adjusting to it accordingly is the key. So tell me how folks can – is there a registration process, that kind of thing? How can folks go and attend this?
Great. At our website at jadc.org, we have a innovation summit. It'll splash on the front page there. So you can go and register online. We are charging a small amount to participate because it's costing us money to put this on, and we want to recover what we can. And we're also going to – you're going to get there's some hard costs in there, lunch and et cetera.
Mm-hmm, sure, yeah.
So go online, register. There's a fee to participate. We're really targeting business leaders. Anyone is welcome to participate. But we really have been looking to try to get as many business people as we can in there, because the topics that we're talking about and the industry groups that we're going to be working with, it's really tailored to the business community. So everyone is welcome. But if you're looking for a non-business venue, this isn't it. This is all about economic development and business opportunities here in our region.
Great. And it's happening February 11th and 12th. February 11th is a half day. The 12th is a full day. It's all at Centennial Hall.
That's right.
And it's the Innovation Summit and Juneau Economic Development Council. People go to jedc.org. To sign up for this? So jedc.org is a place to find out more information on this. Brian Holst, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about it. Sounds like a great summit coming up.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay. Here's Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 9th of January, 2013. It's the birthday of the playwright Brian Friel, born in County Tyrone, Ireland, 1929, went to seminary, decided not to become a priest, dropped out, became a school teacher, and the year he turned 30, one of his stories appeared in the New Yorker magazine, and he was so encouraged he quit teaching to write full-time. The Irish theater director Tyrone Guthrie was a fan of Brian Friel's stories in the New Yorker. And when the Guthrie Theater had its opening in Minneapolis in 1963, Guthrie invited Brian Friel to come along to America and to watch the rehearsal and production process of Hamlet. And within a year, Friel had written his first stage play for production, Philadelphia, Here I Come, about a young man named Gareth O'Donnell leaving his village in County Donegal and heading for America. The play had its premiere in Dublin, 1964, then London, then Broadway, was very popular. He wrote some more plays in the 70s, then had a long spell of writer's block in the mid-80s. Went to see the London opening of a Chekhov adaptation, and afterward went for a walk along the Thames with a friend. They saw some homeless people huddled there in the cold. Friel mentioned that two of his spinster aunts had left Ireland to go to London, ended up alone and homeless, and he decided to write about his aunts. And that was his play Dancing at Lunason. It was the most commercially successful play of his life, and in 1998 was made into a movie starring Meryl Streep. It's the birthday of Simone de Beauvoir, born in Paris in 1908. She went off to the Sorbonne, and there she met her lifelong partner, Jean-Paul Sartre. They fell in love, but instead of getting married, they decided to form a pact. They would each have affairs with other people, but they would tell each other everything, and they would meet regularly in a café and show each other whatever they were working on. And Jean-Paul Sartre went off to write his book Being and Nothingness in 1943, and Simone de Beauvoir, her book The Second Sex in 1949, in which she wrote, "One is not born a woman, one becomes one." It was one of the first arguments that the difference between the sexes was the result of culture, not nature, and it helped to found the modern feminist movement. Here's a poem for today by Diane Derhovenessian, entitled Secret of Life. Once during the war, on a bus going to Portsmouth, a Navy Yard worker told me the secret of life. The secret of life, he said, can never be passed down one generation to the other. The secret of life, he said, is hunger. It makes an open hand. The secret of life is money, but only the small coins. The secret of life, he said, is love. You become what you lose. The secret of life, he said, is water. The world will end in flood. The secret of life, he said, is circumstance. If you catch the right bus at the right time, you will sit next to the secret teller who will whisper it in your ear. The poem Secret of Life by Diane Derhovenessian, from Selected Poems of Diane Derhovenessian, published by Sheep Meadow Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Writer's Almanac for today, where it's mostly sunny for the rest of the day. Well, not sun, I guess we've lost the sun, but clear, and then partly cloudy skies for tonight with patchy fog. Mostly cloudy is in the forecast for tomorrow. A chance of snow and chance of snow for tomorrow night as well. And then Friday and Friday night, snow likely with lows around 26 degrees and highs right around freezing. Coming up next, we've got a brand new person in town here. This is really exciting. Alexandra Gutierrez is with us. You're the new APRN Juno correspondent. And Alexandra, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
It's been great to have you in the building here and this new, you know, workforce happening. It's great to have this new energy happening in the building. And tell me a little bit about what give me a little wrap up of what your career has been so far in Alaska. Maybe you've heard you from APRN up in Anchorage, right?
Yeah. So I moved to Unalaska, I guess more commonly known as soon as you leave the island is Dutch Harbor, in 2010. I came there from Washington, D.C., which was a pretty significant change. I'd been working for a couple of political magazines out in D.C., and then suddenly I became immersed in the world of fish politics, city politics, and high school wrestling, too.
But, I mean, that's true. I mean, you think politics in D.C. are bad, right? And then you go to Dutch, and then you see what real fish politics, man. It is.
You know, I feel like after learning about pollock and halibut and all the different user groups and allocation battles, et cetera, I'm pretty well prepared for most of what I should see in Juno, I would hope.
Yeah, nothing else is going to phase you. That's true.
Yeah, it gets pretty passionate.
So Dave Donaldson, as people know, is retired from APRN, and so we need a new correspondent here in town, and you're filling those shoes. Those are pretty big shoes.
Yeah, he says they're only 10 and a half, but I think they might be a lot bigger than that.
And so what do you see as sort of some of your primary challenges as you're kind of working here in this new position?
Well, I've followed, state politics as much as anyone can from a distance of about 1,000 miles, actually more than that. But when you're reading the newspapers, listening to the radio, you're not hearing about all of the committee battles and all the process. And there's so much institutional knowledge that he has and that so many other people who've been covering the Capitol have. So I'm going to ask a lot of what may initially seem like stupid questions, and I hope that people will indulge me and recognize that I'm learning. But yeah, I'm really excited for it.
It's true. When you sit in on any of these meetings or committee hearings, and you know, every single person sitting in that room is a player in some way, right? And those are all the people that in the, you know, in sort of the reporting that you hear, it can't have that depth of telling
all
that.
Yeah, people would get so bored.
But it's a really key part to understanding what's happening in that room.
Right. I mean, you really need to understand the dynamics of, okay, did this bill die because there was real opposition to it, or was there just some procedural drama that, you know, resulted in being kind of a casualty of that?
Yeah. Those political magazines you worked for in D.C., tell me a little bit more about what your D.C. background was.
I started at The Economist pretty much straight out of college. I was hired to be a multimedia resident there, and I thought I was going to be primarily doing like audio slideshows of the presidential inauguration and the like, which I did.
That's a pretty good gig right out of
it
school.
Was,
the Economist,
it was.
That's a big
no
deal.
Health insurance, but it was a great experience.
That's the snooty mag you always throw out there if you're trying to really crush some argument, right? Well, I read in The Economist.
Yeah, hopefully it gives me a little bit of street cred, but I actually think that KUCB should give me more street cred there. But yeah, this was in 2008. The financial crisis was happening, and I was primarily working as kind of the elf on the economics and finance blog that they had, and then the lead writer ended up having to take a leave of absence for personal reason. He was a little sick at the time, and so I was asked to step in, and like, you took some economics courses in college, I was like, are you sure that I'm capable of this? But because the Economist philosophy is what is written is more important than who writes it, I was anonymous. So no one could really check up to see that, oh man, what is this 23-year-old doing talking about, you know, people short selling and derivatives and CDOs and the VIX index and God knows what, like all this jargon that I was really learning. And it was actually really fortunate because it was such a mess that no one really knew what they were talking about. Kind of learning about, you know, our country's faulty financial architecture on the fly. So it was a really, really interesting time to be there. And I had to learn really quickly. I didn't do anything that tarnished the brand name, so I was happy with that. That every time I published something, I was really worried that someone would figure out that I was faking it. Then I ended up working at the American Prospect, which is a kind of small policy magazine, kind of similar to the New Republic. And I was an online editor there. So my time is kind of split between writing and editing, but primarily editing. I had a friend who had actually worked out in Dutch Harbor, and when he told me that his old job was open, and he described it as like, oh, well, you get to cover like volcanoes and like maritime disasters and like energy policy and fisheries policy and whatever else. I was like, that sounds a lot more exciting.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it is sort of that old reporter. It's what you got a pencil tucked behind your ear and you go and run out and cover stories. I mean, that really is the life. Yeah,
it's definitely a good proving ground for, you know, are you capable of doing like traditional shoe leather reporting? I learned a lot out there and I loved it. Much to my parents' chagrin, who still live on the East Coast, I ended up falling in love with the state. So when the opportunity to move to Juneau and go back to political reporting, when that became available, it really excited me. And I can't think of a place I would rather be. I've only been here for about a week, but there are interesting stories everywhere. It's a beautiful city. Well, my stuff still hasn't made it. I do have my suitcase and my ski gear, so that's really all I've needed so far.
Yeah, that's all you need so far. That's right. I mean, how much stuff do you really need?
Yeah, I have to say, on a day like today, I was feeling some pangs knowing that Eagle Crest was closed and I was working anyway, so yeah, it wouldn't have mattered in the first place.
Well, I know you're on deadline. You got to get back to the story you're working on right now, so we'll let you go. But Alexandra Gutierrez, the new APRN Juno correspondent, thanks so much for coming in. We'll be hearing you on the air.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to hear a little bit of your background and get to know you a little bit. So thanks so much.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Come to the Downtown Public Library on Saturday, January 12th, for an event inspired by The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. From 6 to 7 p.m., participants will enjoy an activity designed by Discovery Southeast, exploring local plants and resources. At 7 p.m., those wishing to stay can settle in with some popcorn and a movie. This event is free and open to the public. For more information, visit juno.org/library or call 586-5249. This message is paid for by the Friends of the Juno Public Library.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. Matt and Jake are here from the Eagle Crest. Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Oh, good. How are you guys doing?
All right.
And nice and cold out there.
Yes.
And so tell me a little bit about what's happened in the past week. How have the conditions? Seems like it was kind of that in between, some rain, some snow.
Yeah, for the most part, it was all snow up at Eagle Crest.
Okay.
Despite being a little bit rainy downtown, it certainly wasn't a lot of snow on any given day. But throughout the holiday break, we had pretty good conditions, all things considered, and some pretty darn good crowds. Lots of people coming up to enjoy the slopes, and definitely lots of kids.
Yeah.
So we just ended that break, and we're all taking a nice 2 days off before we start up again tomorrow.
Yeah, that long run of the holidays where you guys don't get a day off.
Yeah, 18 out of 19 days, something along those lines.
Yeah,
but
right.
Yeah, it was fun to have everybody up there. It was a good stretch for us, and everybody is happy for it to be over, but they're glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, but now as we're getting into January, the big news on the hill itself is about the train park, right?
Yeah. We have two big things going on in January, but one is that actually this weekend we're going to be launching our train park down at the base of Hooter. So if folks have seen the snow piled up there, that's because our ops crew is setting those in place right now. So we're going to have three boxes in place by Saturday.
Yeah, should be. I'd say Saturday morning or Friday afternoon we'll be opening it up to the public, and should be a lot of fun. So thanks again to Alaska Marine Lines for helping us get the boxes up here from down south, and we got them all painted up. They look like containers. It's pretty cool, and we're excited to get that going.
That's cool. They look like containers.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's a good touch. I like it. So the train park opening up, that's cool. Then you were saying there's another big thing happening.
Yeah, it's Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month, so we have probably, I think, almost 10 different specials going on right now for folks so that they can get the same great instruction. You know, we have professional staff to be able to teach folks of any level. So whether you've been skiing or boarding your entire life or you're just looking to learn, but really this month is focusing on getting folks out there for the first time. We have specials that are 2 hours long, and we have some that are a series. So, you know, even Nordic skiing, if you want to stay on the flats, we can offer you that as well. So people can check that out on skijuno.com and find the right deal for them.
Yeah, that's actually a nationwide thing, right? That whole January is learn to snowboard or ski. But it's cool because it's like what I like about it, too, is that it's not just for people who've never snowboarded or skied, but maybe you did 10 years ago and you kind of dropped it, or you didn't have equipment for a while or whatever, and you want to get back into it, but want to kind of ease in.
And you'll see in some of our descriptions of the different programs that it mentions that even, and it'll say for, you know, somebody who's coming back for the second time maybe, or after a little hiatus. And actually, as you mentioned, it's a national program. We won the national prize for having the best program, Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month program in 2011.
All right, let's give it up for you, Chris. And looking to repeat.
You can't win 2 years in a row, so we couldn't win last year, but we were the national model again last year, so we're thinking this is the year again. So,
all right.
So Vail will be looking up to us at Eagle Crest. So if you want to get, if you want your photograph to get passed around the net, show up.
Yeah, it's a great program, and we are used as a model for a smaller ski area on how to get new people up to the hill. And even without this month, you know, just to throw some numbers out there, I think it was Saturday, December 29th, we had 70 first time skiers.
Wow, that's
on
awesome.
The mountain, plus all the kids programs and everything else.
Yeah.
But you know, just to show kind of what we're getting people coming up for.
Tell me a little bit about why you think that is. What are some of the innovative ways you guys think about trying to get people involved?
Certainly. Well, there's probably two main things that have really helped recently. First and foremost is the building and installation of the Porcupine chairlift and that whole beginner area. Before, we had a platter pole, which if anybody tried, and obviously people in Juneau have been learning on that for many, many years, and it was tough. It's very tough to learn how to platter pole.
But a rite of passage.
Well, to some. And some people still say, well, you know, it really makes you earn it. Well, that's great. But the national conversion rate for skiing and snowboarding is about 15%. And the goal of the entire industry is to get that higher than 15%. So basically, out of every 100 people that try it, only 15 turn
Stick
into a
it.
Skier.
Uh-huh.
So the ability to get them up there on the Porcupine chairlift and the beach and beginner area is great. And then the second thing really is our packages and our snow sports school staff that they run. I mean, we've got some amazing deals to get out there, you know, triple play three different times to come up with rentals, lessons, and gear for, you know, just over $100. And it's a really inexpensive way to learn. And it's definitely a source of pride for our snow sports school.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's got to be a huge thing. You just, at Eagle Crest, you don't have to break the bank to try skiing.
Exactly.
Or snowboarding, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's great. And that's part of the whole, we all kind of feel like we have ownership of the mountain up there, you know, because it's a municipally run mountain. And that's a big part of what's awesome about it.
Yeah. And we've got a relatively small community to draw from compared to most ski areas in the lower 48. So our ability to get more and more of the Juneau population up there trying to ski and snowboard is vital to our success. And it really helps us become part of the community.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and then you want to also mention Tailgate Thursdays, right?
Coming up
Let's
tomorrow.
Talk about this. This
yeah.
is pretty cool. So to explain the program. People haven't heard this before. There's also the Tailgate Alaska thing. That's a different thing, right?
We're not worried about that.
I got confused about that. But Tailgate Thursdays, Alaska Brewing Company, and you guys helped put this together for videographers.
Yeah, well, for any videographer
sure.
here, anybody who wants to be in Juneau. So essentially, Alaskan Brewing Company, Eagle Crest, and Imperial Saloon have teamed up, and we have several GoPro helmet cameras that you can check out for free from our retail shop. You can take it up on the slopes for a couple hours, return it, and you'll be entered, as long as you're 21. You have to be 21 to enter. And we'll look through the footage and play. We'll kind of cut up the footage a little bit into cool videos, and every Thursday at 7 p.m. we'll get together at the Imperial Room over some drinks and pick a few select videos to give prizes to, or videographers, I guess, to give prizes to. And one of the neat things this year is that on top of anyone being able to submit their footage, folks that are creating their own videos, editing their own videos, can submit that footage into a second competition. So the grand prize this year is yet to be announced, but I will tell you that a portion of it, a part of it, is going to include some powder skis or a nice fat powder board from Alaskan, and it's going to look cool too. I've had a sneak peek at them. So
okay, wow. All right, so there's some gear involved here. There's some winnings to be had.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So whether you're maybe take it out for your learner special when you're you're going to learn how to ski. Why
I
not?
Love it.
I don't think we've had that footage before. So.
That's a great video right there.
Exactly.
Just beef after beef, face plant after face plant. Just here comes the snow right up and oop, right at it. Oh. I love it though. I think that's a great. That's golden right there. That's a viral video.
It could be.
Absolutely. Well, hey, talk to me a little bit about general conditions. What you sort of see for the coming week. What it's looking like up there right
Certainly.
Now.
Certainly. So, like I mentioned, we have not had an overabundance of fresh snow yet this season, but looking at the weather over the past about 36 hours, while it got cold last night, but prior to that, we did pick up, based on the UAS weather plot, over 20 centimeters of new snow. So that's going to be, hopefully 6 to 8 plus inches, and then it hopefully has dried out over the past 24 hours. And I'm thinking tomorrow might be our first powder Thursday.
So yeah, it's certainly cold enough,
yeah,
it seems like.
As we open back up, I did get some reports that people were touring around the backcountry in other spots and found some really light blower snow. So I'm hoping that's what we have up at Eagle Crest come Thursday. And then we're looking at, snow on and off over the next couple of days, too. So it's definitely looking up from a powder standpoint. And I think I plan on being out there at 9 a.m. tomorrow. I haven't gotten a whole lot of runs yet this year, and I'm thinking tomorrow might be a good one to do it. So I highly recommend, if you got the time, to come on up and join us tomorrow, if not this weekend. And
is the whole mountain open?
Yep, the whole mountain is open. We'll take a look and see if there's any control work that needs to be done in the West or East Bowls. But I think based on the snow we had, there probably shouldn't be too much. But the whole mountain will be open and should be skiing really well with hopefully 6 to 8 inches of fresh, light snow.
Sounds pretty decent.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'd go beyond decent. Like
yeah,
I said,
yeah.
When I first got to Juneau, people told me about powder Thursdays because we're off, we're closed Tuesday,
right.
Wednesday. So the Thursday tends to be a really good day, and I'm thinking tomorrow could be one of those.
Yeah.
And you never know until you go.
That little scratchy throat you're feeling, maybe just a little maybe just warm the boss up a little bit this afternoon as you're heading out. I got a little scratch at me.
Exactly.
And then, go out. Just
That one doesn't
up.
Work for me. I can't
do that
pull that same trick.
We'll just put a scarf up and, do something. Wear a different coat,
And one other thing to mention is that as days are getting longer here, we'll start extending our hours. So beginning tomorrow, Porcupine and Hooter stay open to 3:30, and then in 2 weeks, everything goes to 3:30, and then it keeps getting longer until 4 o'clock until the end of the season. So
It's
an extra half hour on the lower mountain lifts, and soon enough we'll be skiing longer on the upper lifts too.
Any night skiing possibilities, stuff like that? Anything like that
nothing
in the
to
works?
The public right now.
Yeah.
We're taking this winter we're going to take a look at some options. We got some groups that are renting the mountain, and just I get to see how night skiing runs, and it is part of our master planning process to look at what we can do there for night skiing. So nothing for the public this season, but hopefully. In the coming
the working
years.
On, yeah. And then you guys are back to regular hours. Holiday hours are over now. You guys are back to regular hours where Tuesdays and Wednesdays are off for the next foreseeable.
Yep, Tuesdays and Wednesdays
are
off. And then we have our spring break in March. But the other thing to keep in mind there is that the snow bus will only be running on weekends now, not during the week.
Okay.
So don't get caught looking for that on a Thursday or Friday because it won't be there. And the other thing to keep in mind is that Black Bear does not run middle of the week, only on weekends. Now that we're past the holiday break. So those are the real main differences in our operating schedule.
All right. Great to know. All right. Well, Eagle Crest, it's all looking up. It's all looking great.
It is.
And you heard it. Matt Lillard guaranteeing beautiful powder tomorrow morning.
Sure. Okay.
That was it. I heard it. Thanks, you guys. That's Eagle Crest Ski Report. That's Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate all of my guests coming in, including Julie Walker from Aware, Brian Holst from JEDC. And Brian wanted to mention the sponsors of the Innovation Summit coming up, includes the U.S. Forest Service, University of Alaska Southeast, Alaska Communications, Sea Alaska, and the Southeast Conference, and also JEDC, of course, and then Ha'ani as well. So thanks to those sponsors for putting that on. Alexandra Gutierrez, you'll be hearing her on APRN as the new Juneau correspondent covering the legislature here. And then, of course, thanks to Matt and Jake on the Eagle Crest Ski Report. Hope you all are doing well. Hope you enjoyed the show as well. And once again, the forecast for the rest of today is for clear skies and highs around 31 degrees. Heading into tonight, we've got partly cloudy skies and patchy fog in the forecast with lows in the teens. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, chance of snow, highs around 29 degrees, and mostly cloudy with a chance of snow for tomorrow night as well. Snow and rain likely on Friday with highs right around freezing, and then snow likely on Friday night. Cloudy with a chance of snow for Saturday and Saturday night, and snow likely for Sunday and Sunday night. Rain and snow in the forecast for Monday through next Tuesday in the long-range forecast. That's it for Juneau Afternoon. Thanks so much. Coming up with All Things Considered next from NPR.